You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
This is Serena Zetz. I'm 16 years old, and I'm a junior at Pittsburgh Kappa.
This is Grace Dorfler. I'm 17 years old, and I'm a junior at Oakland Catholic High School. You're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day.
MLK once said that the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. With Donald Trump's election, we're in a huge moment of controversy and challenge. So, Grace, what do you think that we can do about that?
I think one thing that we're seeing a lot of is the use of art as activism, whether that be abroad or right here at home. A perfect example would be the musical Hamilton. Lin-Manuel Miranda has really championed the modern civil rights movement.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool to make the connection between artists in the civil rights movement like Nina Simone and how she used music to convey a political message. And then today we see that in not only music with artists like John Legend and other like mainstream artists who are taking political stances, but yeah, definitely in Hamilton as well.
Yeah, and his casting in that show has been very deliberate. It's a really diverse cast. And during the election season, Hamilton spread a very important political message of American diversity and the importance of diversity. For instance, there was the incident when Mike Pence went to see Hamilton, and the cast gave him the message of the importance of celebrating diversity in America.
Yeah, I think that Lin-Manuel Miranda and all of the cast members of Hamilton have done a really good job in showing that diversity is what America's all about, and that completely contrasts Trump's message. What was the quote that the cast said to Mike Pence?
Right, so the actor who plays Aaron Burr, Brandon Victor Dixon, told Pence, "We are the diverse America who are alarmed and anxious that your new administration will not protect us, our planet, our children, our parents, or defend us and uphold our inalienable rights, sir. But we truly hope this show has inspired you to uphold our American values and work on behalf of all of us. All of us." So I think that message that the show inspires people towards social justice and political activism is an important one.
Vice President-elect Mike Pence is extremely anti-LGBT and anti-like funding for HIV testing. And so I think it's really important that the actor who's now playing Hamilton, Javier Munoz, is an openly gay, HIV-positive man. So I think that it's like really important to show that Hamilton represents how intersectional and diverse our country is, and it was really important that they like showed that message to Mike Pence.
And I think that the art as activism plays an important role in Pittsburgh as well. Whether that be in our schools, youth can play an important role in spreading social justice on their school newspapers through Youth Express. Recently, the Warhol Museum hosted Ai Weiwei, who is a very political Chinese dissident.
I go to Kappa, which is the Creative and Performing Arts School, and a lot of students there, including myself, care a lot about social justice and social issues, and we try to incorporate that into our artwork. And so, yeah, they took us on a field trip to see the Ai Weiwei exhibit. And it was just really interesting to see how the themes that are like relevant to our art and activism play out in his work, because he has such a different like experience from me, but a lot of the same issues impact us.
Right, and I think that use of art is something that Martin Luther King would have approved of, and I think that he would encourage young people today to use their voices to spread messages about justice.
Mm-hmm. And one huge part of the civil rights movement was that it was like student-driven, with the Student Nonviolence Coordinating Committee and the Children's Crusade. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. led a lot of students to fight for these issues, and that they made a huge difference in the fight. We're going to take a break, and then when we get back, we'll discuss Black Lives Matter movement and how we can connect the message of the civil rights movement to today.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day, with Grace Dorfler,
and Serena Zetz. Before the break, we mentioned that during this segment, we were going to delve into the topic of Black Lives Matter and how that played a role in Obama's presidency and how it opposes all of Trump's values. So for those of you who don't know, Black Lives Matter is a social movement that was founded by three LGBT black women in the wake of Trayvon Martin's death. And it started as a hashtag just validating the lives of black people within the United States, and now it's grown into a full-fledged national movement. And so a lot of their ideals, like anti-police brutality and anti-mass incarceration, have been echoed and heard by President Obama. But meanwhile, President-elect Trump denounced them and called them a terrorist organization. So during this segment, we're going to just analyze the differences between those.
The Black Lives Matter movement felt pretty comfortable under Obama's administration in spreading their message of social justice and racial equality. But in the wake of Trump's election, it's been troubling for that movement to see the anti-diversity platform with a 75% white male cabinet, very little diversity. The vice president-elect, Mike Pence, has denounced homosexuality and the LGBT community. And so it makes those who support the Black Lives Matter movement question where they're going to go from here.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see like the sharp contrast between both administrations, because while Obama appointed the first transgender woman to the White House LGBT liaison post, Trump appointed Jeff Sessions, who has a horrible record on civil rights and who was denounced by the NAACP and also supported by the KKK.
Interestingly, just this Martin Luther King Day weekend, Trump has angered a lot of civil rights activists by attacking John Lewis, who has championed civil rights.
I think that it's just ridiculous that Trump thinks he has the authority to like attack John Lewis's record, because not only was he a key leader to the civil rights movement, he's also a member of Congress, and he's like well respected by the American public. And it's a common agreement, universal truth, that he's done a lot for our country. And so the fact that like Trump attacked him, especially on this weekend, I just find it like without any basis and really disrespectful. What do you think about it, Grace?
I think it's very provocative for Trump to be making these comments before he even comes into office. He's had a poor track record for responding to criticism from the other side of the aisle, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out once he takes office and how he will engage in conversation with people who do not share his views.
Like, Obama's always been a unifier of our country throughout his presidency and during his campaigns. And even in his farewell address last week, he still promoted the idea of, like, unity within our country. And I think that was really necessary because Trump's been promoting an ideal of division.
Obama's farewell address was interesting because he discussed some of the tensions that have come to light during the campaign season and tried to address them. He said, "After my election, there was talk of a post-racial America, and such a vision, however well-intended, was never realistic. Race remains a potent and often divisive force in our society. Now, I've lived long enough to know that race relations are better than they were 10 or 20 or 30 years ago, no matter what some folks say. But we're not where we need to be, and all of us have more work to do."
As a person of color, and after I've like talked to other people of color, I think we all agree that there's no way that the United States is ever going to be a post-racial society, because there are three levels of racism, which are institutional, interpersonal, and internal. And so institutional, like having a black president isn't going to like get rid of the prison industrial complex and the school to prison pipeline and mandatory sentencing. And so the fact that people think that that one advancement erases like the rest of our country's injustices is really frustrating.
Although Obama has had a number of successes for civil rights during his administration, we did shatter that glass ceiling when we elected our first black president of the United States. We also achieved marriage equality during his time in office. And so those are some positive successes that Obama leaves behind as his legacy. but there's still a lot of work to do.
It's really important that Obama acknowledged the myth of a post-racial society, and hand in hand with that is the fact that people think that discrimination against LGBT people and homophobia is over now that marriage equality has passed. And I think that Obama realizes that that's also not true, and we have a lot of work to do. I, along with a lot of other people, are worried about how Trump is going to reverse that and take us backwards instead of forward.
And I think another popular misconception is that feminism is no longer relevant, that gender equality has been achieved, and I do not think that's the case, partly shown by our continued failure to elect a female president, also in other respects, like the wage gap between men and women. And Serena, can you speak to that?
Yeah, well, a few months ago at Kappa, our school newspaper published an op-ed entitled "Why We Don't Need Feminism in the Western World." It was basically just arguing that feminism isn't needed anymore because Hillary Clinton ran for president, sexism is over, and it literally quoted The Onion. And so it was just obviously a piece of like bad journalism that wasn't fact-checked or proven or supported. And I think it just goes to show that even in a really like liberal and progressive environment like Kappa, there's still people who believe that none of this work is necessary.
When we come back, we'll talk more about feminism today and activism today in the civil rights movement.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day, with Serena Zetz
and Grace Dorfler.
So during this segment, we're going to connect what we just talked about Black Lives Matter, to how to be a better ally and how you can take part in activism today. From Grace and my experiences, neither of us are Black, so we act as allies to the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think a lot of people have misconceptions about what it means to be an ally. One of like the major actions taken by allies in the wake of Trump's election was the safety pin movement. And so for those of you who don't know, after Trump was elected and there was like widespread violence and like dangerous incidences for people of color, a group of white allies decided that it would be a good idea to wear safety pins on their clothes to identify them as people that could stand up for people of color in those incidents. And we just wanted to talk about the issues with that and also if it's productive or not. So what do you think, Grace?
In terms of productivity, I think it's important for people to show their solidarity with people of color in the wake of Trump's election. I think safety pins can be a productive way to start that dialogue and start that understanding, but just saying that you're supportive is not enough. You need to actually have a voice and be vocal about your beliefs and actually take a stand for what you believe in.
In the days after the election, my family had a really interesting conversation about the controversy surrounding the safety pins, and my dad, who's white, thought that was a really good idea, and he started wearing the safety pins to, like, identify himself as, like, a safe person. But my mom, who's Indian and also an immigrant, she pointed out to him that it's very, like, easy and passive to do that and to wear the safety pin because it's not really putting him in any harm. But it's a lot more important and, like, it shows more solidarity if you actually speak up in those instances and like do more than just being silent.
I would agree with that. And have you seen a lot of safety pins at your school, Serena?
I have, and we've had a lot of discussions about it in our BSU and in our FSU about just how students felt about it. And yeah, a lot of students of color echoed what my mom was saying, that they thought that it was a really passive way for white people to get involved and that more action needs to be taken. Have you seen any at Oakland?
I had not really heard a whole lot about the safety pin movement, and I hadn't really been looking for safety pins around Oakland, but I do think that our Black Student Union, which is in collaboration with Central Catholic, does a great job of raising awareness about diversity and the importance of respecting other viewpoints.
So in your experience, like aside from safety pins, what have been some good ways to show that you're an ally, and what have been some actions that you've done?
Journalism, whether that be through SLB or through our school newspaper, is a great way to get involved. Also, writing letters to the editor of your newspaper. That's something that I've done in the past, and I think it's a good way for anybody to get their voice out and share what they believe in, what troubles them, what their hopes are. Also, I think our school does a pretty good job of sharing all voices of all opinions.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you were saying about journalism, because recently there's been such a conversation surrounding fake news and the spread of it. And so I think that now it's even more important than ever to produce and create content that's authentic and unbiased.
Yeah, I think that will be an interesting problem that the media will be facing moving forward under the Trump administration. In his most recent press conference, Trump has had hired staffers to cheer for what he said, which is definitely breaking with protocol for press conferences. And he's recently been discussing the possibility of not housing press conferences in the West Wing anymore and instead having them still on the White House grounds, but outside the building, which would be a challenge for the free press. A lot of journalists think that Trump's administration will hurt the press, but an interesting perspective to consider is if his reaction towards the press will actually encourage journalists to be better watchdogs under his administration and actually be more vigilant as a result.
Both you and I are young female journalists. So do you have any fears about the Trump administration and how it could affect us?
Well, I think his dialogue both about women and about journalists has raised some concerns. He's known for disrespectful dialogue about women, and with incidents like his mocking of the reporter who was disabled and his refusal to take a question from the CNN journalist, I think it'll be interesting to see once he's inaugurated how he'll respond to the press.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think allies and like youth could do to combat Trump's negative rhetoric?
Well, I think while social media has caused some problems by spreading fake news, I think it can also provide a lot of opportunities for journalists like you and I to spread the truth about issues that we care about and to be activists for change. What do you think?
Well, I think that our job as both journalists and allies is to amplify the voices of those who aren't heard. And so I think it's really important for people to continue this dialogue that has been going on and that is being heard here today.
Serena, I hear that you are going to be getting involved in some activism of your own pretty soon. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so next Saturday, I think we all know, is the Women's March on Washington, and I'm really excited. I'm going to it with my mom and my best friend and her mom, and my mom works as the civil rights compliance officer at CCAC, and as a woman of color, she's very active in activism and social movements, and so she's instilled that in me, and I'm really excited to share that experience with her.
For that matter, I think that even if you're not able to go to the Washington, D.C. event, I believe there's sister marches all around the country, including one that will be held in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, there's one happening in Pittsburgh, and it starts next Saturday, the 21st, at 10 a.m. at the, I believe it's the county building in downtown Pittsburgh.
Right. So I think they're expecting a pretty good turnout of feminists and minorities looking to amplify their voices the day after the inauguration.
And I think it's really important for people to acknowledge that it's not just women marching and women that are going to be affected by Trump. They just took on that name because a lot of women are going to be affected by his rhetoric and his policies. But it's also for men and non-binary people and anyone who's been disenfranchised by him. So in this case, I think it's really important for men to become allies in this movement.
I would agree with that. I think it's important to know that men can be feminists as well and work for equal rights between the genders.
I'm not sure if Trump agrees with that, but I agree with you. Yeah, what do you think are other ways that we can continue this fight in the coming days and years?
I think it's important to watch the inauguration and listen to what Trump has to say, even if you don't agree with him. If activists are going to be preaching tolerance, it's important to recognize that tolerance should not become an echo chamber of your own beliefs, that you should listen to both sides of the argument and stand up for what you believe in while acknowledging that sometimes you know, you need to listen to both sides of the argument. That's a really important part of social change.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I'm also a big advocate of getting involved with your local government. And Pittsburgh's Mayor Bill Peduto is doing a lot. And he's had some shortcomings on some issues like the gentrification of East Liberty. But he's a primarily liberal politician, and also our governor, Tom Wolf, is liberal. And so I think it's important to realize that while Trump is president and his policies are going to affect us, our local government's policies will affect our day-to-day lives even more.
Right. Serena, how do you think that the liberal Pennsylvania governments will respond to the new administration?
Well, I think Pennsylvania's legislature is really interesting because while we have a liberal governor, we have a Republican-controlled state House and state Senate. And so in the past, we've seen a lot of his executive orders and his bills be stopped by the Republican-controlled Congress. So I think it's going to be a continuation of the battle for power within those two bodies. And yeah, I'm really interested in seeing how they respond.
It'll also be interesting to see how parties evolve from here following the election, what the Democratic Party will do, and also what the Republican Party will do.
Yeah, one theme that I noticed during the election was how many Republicans were denouncing Trump and voting either independent or Democrat. And so I think it's really interesting how this election is going to shape our generation's political ideologies and how we vote in the future.
Speaking of our generation, do you think that young people are more likely to be involved in activism movements than our parents' generation?
I think that the movements of the past couple of generations have been really important, like the second wave of feminism and the civil rights movement. Obviously, MLK and Malcolm X and John Lewis and Gloria Steinem and Audre Lorde and all of the others were really important. But one thing that we don't give recognition to is the amount of students that were involved in those movements, like the Student Nonviolence Coordinating Committee and other student groups were really influential in the fight. And so I think it's empowering and striking to see how many students and people in our generation are taking part in Black Lives Matter and feminism and becoming more accepting and tolerant of each other.
Yeah, I think that it's great to see young people getting involved in issues that they care about. To tie back to the Women's March on Washington, it almost calls back to Martin Luther King's March on Washington and that fight for social rights.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I also think it's really interesting how many people are getting their really young children involved in these fights because Trump's pick for Department of Education doesn't believe in public education, and that's going to affect, well, I go to a public school, so that's going to affect me and my classmates and my brother and my cousins and, everyone I know who goes to public school. And so I think it's going to be really interesting to see how people even younger than us are going to be, raised in this fight.
Yeah. In fact, I just saw a photo in the Post-Gazette this morning of a girl only about 3 or 4 years old mailing a letter to President-elect Trump with her views on his policies, his incoming administration. So even children that young are sharing their voices, which is interesting.
Yeah, my cousin, who's 6, she was asking me how I felt about the election because she knew that I was really involved in the Sanders and Clinton campaigns, and I went to a lot of their events and spoke with some of their policy writers, and I interviewed some people. She just put it really simply. She said, "I'm sad that Trump won because he's a bully and he's mean to me and people like me." And she was telling me how she's really scared. And I was just trying to emphasize to her that stuff like this has happened before and people have gotten through it. And I really believe in her and the strength of her peers and that we'll be able to get through it.
I would agree with that. Although it is interesting that this year's election was almost not child-friendly in its rhetoric. So honestly, I'm a little bit surprised. While it is good to see young children caring about their government and the United States, it's also a little bit troubling that parents would have to be careful about exposing their children to politics.
Yeah, I think that a lot of that not child-friendly rhetoric is what prompted parents to get their kids involved because they realized that this wasn't okay. That conversation wasn't going to change without the involvement of young kids.
All right. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the current civil rights movement and more ways to get involved. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day, with Grace Dorfler
and Serena Zetz. During this segment, we're going to discuss MLK's legacy, current civil rights efforts, and the role of allies within those movements. So we'll be continuing the conversation from before the break. So on MLK Day, we think a lot about MLK's legacy. And Grace, like, what are your thoughts on his work and the effects of it?
I think he made great strides towards breaking down racial stereotypes and working towards racial justice. But I think it's important to recognize that his work is by no means finished.
It's really interesting because on MLK Day, we talk a lot about the differences between the legacies of MLK and Malcolm X and how MLK's like message was more widespread than Malcolm X's and how people tried to stop Malcolm X. And so I think it's just really interesting to see the differences between like more mainstream activists and more radical ones. On the topic of the legacy of the civil rights movements, what are some movements that are still going on today?
Right, so we've got the LGBTQ movement, we've got the feminist movement,
Black Lives Matter movement. And I think earlier we discussed Obama's critique of the notion of a post-racial society, and I think that all of these movements show that the fight never stops. Yeah, and so when we were planning this segment, Grace and I talked about how it's really interesting that MLK based his movement in the church and as a pastor, and how if he had taken on the fight for LGBT rights, he would have been disenfranchised from the church. So, like, what do you think about the LGBT movement today?
So Martin Luther King, this is an issue that he did not take on, but today the LGBT movement is very much in the forefront. This year, the Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage. The church's response to that has been interesting, especially considering that Francis is the current pope, and he's been much more progressive than a lot of his predecessors.
Yeah, and we already talked a lot about how President-elect Trump is very anti-Black Lives Matter, but him and his administration are also very anti-LGBT. So it's going to be interesting to see in the near future how these movements are able to take root despite that opposition. So what do you think about the role of allies in these movements?
I think it's very important for people to get involved, even if they don't necessarily fall under the category of a racial or sexual orientation. Yeah, I think it's important for them to also share their voices and stand up for those groups, rather than just interacting with people who look the same or have the same opinions or views on a subject.
Right before this, I was at Winchester Thurston attending an MLK Day event, and it was called Day On, and it was a day of workshops surrounding social justice. And a student raised the point that it's the job for allies to act as the microphone for movements. And I thought that was a really interesting analogy because it talked about how the focus of the movements, like Black people or LGBT people or people of color or women, are the speakers, and then the allies in that case are the microphone that's using their privilege to amplify the messages of those movements.
That's really an interesting point with allies as microphones, and I think it's a very valid one that people don't listen enough to those who do not share their opinions. And certainly I think allies can be an important step towards building understanding and making people listen more to the other side of the argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree that allies are a really important part of each movement, but I think it's important that they recognize that they shouldn't overstep, that they should be there more to listen and support, because sometimes allies of movement like overstep and don't actually listen to those at the center of it. And so it's really important to avoid doing that. So what do you think are some next steps for allies and for activists?
I think in today's society, the role of social media will continue to be a very important one. Particularly Twitter, I think, will be a very important one We've seen that, for instance, in the Black Lives Matter movement, Twitter was key to rousing people to action, getting people involved, and raising awareness.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that in addition to engaging with people on social media and sharing your views and learning, it's really important to also like physically be in a space where you're listening to people and where you're telling them about your beliefs. And so I would encourage listeners and students to join their schools like Black Student Union or Feminist Student Union. And if you don't know a lot about that movement or that topic, then go there to listen and learn. Or if you do know a lot about it, then go there to share.
And I think it's important to realize that you can be a part of those movements, say, even if you're not a woman or even if you're not Black, you can still listen to other people's perspectives and stand up for equality and justice.
And also, we talked at the beginning of the hour about how art can be used as a tool for activism. And I think that's really important to reiterate because art has like always been a universal language, whether it's visual, musical, written, and we should continue that in the future.
Let's talk about ways that young people can get involved with causes that they care about in addition to in their school buildings.
Well, I know in Pittsburgh there's a lot of student activist groups. There's Pittsburgh Student Activist Coalition, YUIR, Youth Undoing Institutional Racism, should be starting again soon. There's a lot of other groups that you can seek out and that are really welcoming of people of different identities and belief systems. So yeah, I would encourage people to take part in those. Do you have any other tips for people to get involved?
I would say that it's important not to lock yourself in an echo chamber. Say you're on social media, to surround yourself with perspectives both of informed people who agree with what you have to say and people who have the opposite opinion from you. I think that's really important for understanding. So that's about all the time we have. Thank you for supporting Streaming Justice. Up next is more music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day. Streaming Justice will continue until 11 p.m. at youthexpress.org.